Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
What happens when you wake up one morning and you just simply do not want to go to work? In fact, you don't want to go to work that day. You don't want to go to work ever again. It's a scenario that many people face, Casey Edwards being one of them. She was a 30-something, highly motivated, highly successful change management consultant who realized she just didn't care about change management consultancy. She had reached a point in her career where she'd lost all passion and felt no sense of purpose or meaning at all, but couldn't see a way off the treadmill. So Casey embarked on a bit of a quest for answers. She tried everything from doctors and psychologists, clairvoyance, self-help books, meditation retreats in her search for meaning, and she's chronicled her experiences in a book called 30-something and Over It, and she joins me now. Hi, Casey.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
It's nice to have you here. Really interesting meeting you face-to-face and speaking to you off-air just for a moment there, and just having a slightly different persona to what's actually presented in the book. The book is quite raw. The language can be quite raw. I haven't heard a swear word out of you once.
No, I tell people I really am a nice girl. When I first started writing the book, it was almost like therapy. I didn't actually expect that it would be published. So I was writing how I felt and how other people felt. I spoke to a lot of people who were like me and not like me, and I told their stories too, and I wrote it really candidly, and now it's turned up in bookstores.
And here it is. The journal went public.
That's right. Yes. So people, when they meet me, expect me to be, I think, more brash than I actually
than you
come
actually
across
are.
In
it's,
real life.
It's really interesting. The midlife crisis is well known. We've, in recent years, heard about a quarter-life crisis, or what you call a thrisis, you know, the 30-something crisis. It seems to be getting out there a bit.
Yeah, I think a thrisis is different from a midlife crisis. That was one of the starting points of my research, because I thought, I'm a little young to be having a midlife crisis, and do I really need to cure it with a sports car and some cosmetic surgery to make me feel young again? But the problem was I didn't feel old. And I think that's one of the differences between a midlife crisis and a thrisis, is that I wasn't looking back at my life with a sense of regret, feeling like I'd wasted the best years of my life. In fact, I was still looking forward. I was early 30s, and I had a lot of years left and a lot of opportunity. I just realized that I wanted to spend those years differently.
Tell me about the moment there where you did wake up that morning and said, I just don't give a care about this anymore.
It was really shocking to me, because I'd always been really ambitious, and my identity was stitched to the title on my business card, and I was very proud of everything that I'd achieved, and I had the lifestyle and the assets to match. And I woke up one morning and realized that I'd done everything that was supposed to make me happy. I'd ticked all the boxes, and where was the payoff? And I realized that it hadn't come, and I just had this overwhelming sense of meaninglessness and pointlessness. And that also was accompanied with a sense of guilt, which has come out in my research, in that we live very privileged lives, and I thought, how dare I be discontented with my perfect life when I've achieved everything I wanted to
when
do.
When children are dying of hunger and starvation.
Exactly.
And like
even now with the financial crisis, like, how dare I be contemplating job satisfaction when I should just be lucky to have a job? And so I hoped that it was just a phase that would just pass, and I didn't tell anyone about it. And well, weeks and then months passed, and it didn't go away. And each day it just got worse and worse, this feeling of wanting more out of life and wasting each day. And that's when I decided that I needed to do some research and fix it, because it wasn't going to go away
on its
own.
And go on a bit of a journey. See, what you've described in the book and what you've just described there, I think is something that all of us will go through. Or if we start to feel it, we actually might kind of tuck it away, put it away, turn the music up a little bit louder, you know, so we don't actually, we can be distracted from those things.
That's right. And I write about my story as well as the journey of my best friend, Emma, who I finally had the courage to confess to her how I was feeling, and she was equally ambitious, so I expected her to just disregard what I was saying. And I was really relieved when she said, oh my God, I feel like that too. But her journey was very different from mine. And the reason I've written both of our stories was to just contrast the difference in the journeys. And I think that that's an important message that I want to get across in the book, is that there isn't one answer to a thrisis, and there isn't a quick fix, just add water and stir. It's an individual process that you need to go through, and it's all about getting to know yourself again and what you value, and then realigning your life with those values.
The fact that we wrestle with the meaning of life or the purpose of life or what my life is supposed to be about shows that at the very heart we need to have some sort of sense of purpose and meaning of life.
Absolutely, because I used to care so much about my career, and then when I realised that I didn't care about it, that I was simply making money for people who already had enough and shuffling paper from one desk to another, I didn't have anything else in my life to care about, and that void was almost unbearable.
Mm.
And since the book's come out, I've been overwhelmed by the number of emails that I've got from people who are telling me their stories, who feel the same.
Same way.
And I actually felt quite sad when I was doing a lot of my research and interviewing people to discover how many people are deeply unsatisfied with how they're living their lives, but yet they don't talk about it or they don't feel entitled to fix it. From the outside looking in, they've got great lives. Mm. And society's measure for success is often materialistic, and so when you achieve those things, you feel like you should be happy.
You should be happy.
In reality, they're not.
This is Open House across the nation. Casey Edwards is with us. We're talking about the thrisis, the 30-something crisis, that loss of meaning, loss of purpose, when you kind of have what everybody says you're supposed to have to feel good, and you don't feel good, you don't feel happy, you don't feel content. What did you learn about corporate culture as you were going through this? Because this was a crisis of faith, really, in the end, about career being the ultimate meaning of life.
Yeah, look, there were many things that I started to see, and it's really amazing what you do see when, yeah, you do start looking around. I had a very myopic vision. I was just looking up the corporate ladder, and it wasn't about whether or not I was on the right path. It was just about how far and how fast I could progress along it.
Mm.
And once I started stepping back from that and being a little bit more objective, I would see that a lot of people who I worked with were actually faking it. They come to work and we all pretend that we're competent, and we pretend that we know what we're talking about, and we pretend to be happy. But then in actual fact, we're not. And yeah, then 6 o'clock comes and everyone goes and drinks their gin and tonics to numb the pain, and then you come back the next day and don your corporate persona and do it all again.
Yeah.
I also learnt about feminism, and my views on feminism changed, because I was raised to believe that it was almost like my obligation to get that seat at the boardroom table.
Yes.
I was very much aware of the struggle that my four mothers and grandmothers had gone through to enable me to have this. And it was like I was wasting my potential and the opportunities that they'd provided if I didn't take the corporate path. And so now I view feminism as being able to choose what you want without judgment, rather than just following the set path.
You're not alone in that rethinking, is it? You think about authors like Emily Maguire and a number of others are actually raising this question, what has feminism actually led to in the end? In Emily Maguire's words, you know, princesses or porn stars really is what a woman now has to choose from. And it seems like the great liberation it was going to be hasn't actually eventuated in the end. And Hugh McKay actually makes that point a lot as well, that often it's actually just given more problems to deal with, more roles to hold actually at the same time, and more burnt out women as a result.
Yeah, I don't want to be critical of feminists, because, and the feminist movement, and I still consider myself to be a feminist, because I have opportunities that my grandmother didn't ever dream of. But I think, like all change, the pendulum sometimes swings too far before it comes back into the middle. I particularly see that now with when I was interviewing women in their late 30s who are now getting to the point where their biological clocks are starting to ring really loudly, or it's too late, and you look at them and they did what they were supposed to do. They put their careers first, and ending up not having a child, if that's what you want, seems to be far too great a sacrifice.
Well, you also look in the book about some of the other things that we often, I guess, kind of place happiness, meaning, purpose, etc. on. Money, you talk about a guy called Peter, who you learned a good lesson there from.
Yeah, that's right. First of all, let me say that, I mean, from my own financial point of view, and I write about that in the book, is that I was earning very good money. My bonus was what some people raise whole families on, but yet I was in massive debt. And what was also really common in my interview and when I looked around at my friends was that we were trying to consume to fill the void in our lives. Mm. So we would spend it on day spas and expensive clothing and shoes and things like that. And that was one of the things that really changed, that I realized that the things that actually made me happy in life didn't really cost much at all. Mm. So that was quite a liberating revelation. But I also thought that in the beginning, I thought maybe I just don't want to work anymore. And if I could just give up work or win the lottery or bring myself to marry for money instead of love, then I'd be happy. But then I met this guy called Peter who made all his money in the dot-com boom. And he was very wealthy. And he was also the most distressed person that I interviewed. And that was because he had enough money that he didn't value anything because he didn't need to work for anything. Mm. But he was also lost. He had no reason to get out of bed in the morning. No one demanded anything of him, and he spent his life playing. He would learn to surf and learn to fly and just entertain himself with hobbies, but he had no meaning and no purpose. And I remember thinking at the time that probably the best thing that could happen to him was that he could lose his money and he'd have to go back to work again, because then he would have a reason to get out of bed. And so that was an interesting realization for me, that it's not about not working. It's about finding meaningful work or finding meaningful things in your life.
We are built, we are made, dare I say, we are created to actually contribute to society, to actually give something back. Now, when we place all of our meaning and happiness and everything on that, then it's going to collapse.
Yes.
But like you said, if you take it away, you know, that's part of our DNA. We are actually meant to contribute and to give.
I've just experienced that recently because I've just been retrenched. Actually, it was the same day that my book was published.
Wow. Well, the next edition will have an extra chapter in there. I'm sure it will.
Yeah. And I think, being retrenched is always a devastating experience. Mm. And one of the things that I really struggled with was waking up with this sense of not belonging to anywhere anymore. And no one would mind if I got out of bed and there was no routine for me. So I had to create my own structures, which was difficult to do.
And how did you do that? What did you do?
I'm also pregnant at the moment.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So I was at the time, I was too pregnant to start looking for another job. So my routine that I've created is I'm working on my next book. So I get up every morning like I'm going to work and I write, and then I make time for social things in the middle of the day. And I'm also doing promotional things for the book as well. But I'm being very strict about treating my life like I have a job as well.
Mm. This is Open House Across the Nation. Casey Edwards is our guest. 30-something and over it is the name of her book. We're talking about her personal journey of looking for meaning and for purpose when it didn't seem to be there in all of the things that she was supposed to have been finding in work and money, etc. Theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast. Leads us very naturally then to the whole idea of worldviews, spirituality, etc. You go on a bit of a journey there as well. You go on a meditation retreat. You go and visit a clairvoyant who gives you some readings about your life. So does your best friend Emma, who you also write about in the book. Tell me what you brought out of that and what you got out of that in terms of starting to think about that aspect of life.
Well, I did a lot of research into happiness, and I couldn't help but notice everywhere I looked the link between spirituality and well-being and happiness. And I was raised agnostic, so I really felt like I didn't have any kind of religious or spiritual influence in my life. Mm. And in a way, I've always felt envious of people who have it, because I can see that they get something out of it, and it was almost beyond my understanding. But at the same time, I felt it would be a little opportunistic to go and knock on the door of a church and say, sign me up, I'm ready to be happy now. So what I did do is start doing some research into different areas of spirituality. And I came across something called Vipassana meditation. Its claim was that it was universal, that it didn't matter if you were religious or not. So I went and did a 10-day Vipassana course, which is silent meditation. So no eye contact, no speaking, no human interaction for 10 days. Mm-hmm. And that was a really profound experience for me. And I learned a lot about myself. Mm-hmm. And I suppose had a spiritual experience in that there were times when I was meditating where I was actually outside of my body and I was just consumed by this feeling or almost a knowing of love, I guess. And it feels strange for me to articulate this because mm-hmm. it's not usually things that I discuss, but mm. I just felt this connectedness to everything else, and that has changed my perspective mm. on the world.
What do you think you were experiencing there, that experience of love? What do you think that was?
Well, the cynic in me was saying I was just in such extreme pain because we sit there for 14 hours and I was
hallucinating emotionally.
But it just, I think what it was, well, I mean, it was a realization that there's more to the world than just my body and my mind. And I don't have the answers any further than that, but it's quite reassuring to know that it is.
Mm. So is that something that you're interested in exploring further, though? I mean, what I find really interesting about what you've just described is that it is encapsulated pretty well in what Rebecca Huntley, in her book on Generation Y, even though I don't think you're probably Generation Y. I'm in my mid-30s.
Yes, me too.
So we're Generation X.
Yeah.
But even Douglas Copeland in Generation X talked about the fact that, you know, our boomer parents lost faith, and so we were raised either agnostic or without any kind of sense of an ultimate reality, an ultimate maybe even a creator, a person out there that actually can be related to. We're kind of catching up.
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca talks about Generation Y kind of on a search, on a spiritual search, looking for the values, looking for maybe the faith that, you know, they need to find some sort of sense of meaning and purpose. Your story fits in, and actually if we were going into my story would fit into that as well. Then it comes down to, well, is there something beyond, even beyond that experience? Is there actually a person that you're encountering there, or there was some sort of connection there with a creator?
Yes, and I don't feel qualified to comment, which sounds really strange, but I feel like on my path of enlightenment, I've taken a couple of steps.
On your journey.
Yes. But at the moment, that's enough. Like, it's reassuring for me to know that there is a journey for me to go on. But I also suffer from depression. I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder after a traumatic event a couple of years ago. And the knock-on effect is I suffer from depression from time to time, and I find the meditation hugely helpful mm-hmm. with that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know that I'm going to be praying for you, don't you? You know that I'm going to be praying for your journey. The Christian vision would say that there is a personal, infinite creator God out there who is love, who is the source of all love and goodness and truth and beauty and relationship and all of that kind of stuff, who can be related to and who gives meaning to our jobs and meaning to sex and meaning to relationships and meaning to the down times and the quiet times too. There we go. I'll just give him a little Christian bit to you.
Yeah, thank you.
It's fascinating though, because again, we're talking about universal journeys and universal searches for things like that. In the end, you come at the end of the book and you kind of give a list of 10 kind of lessons that you've learned. A lot of them that I really do agree with, i.e. you talk about putting all of your happiness eggs into the career basket is asking for trouble.
That's right. And I mean, our whole lives, that's the focus. I mean, so much of education is about getting a job at the end of it. And what do you want to be when you grow up?
Mm.
It's true for anything in life. You can't rely on just one thing to provide you with happiness.
Mm. And fun and freedom are not enough to sustain us either.
That's what I got
from Peter. Yep.
That we need something more. We need something bigger than ourselves. We need something that we can work towards and watch grow and nurture and actually almost put constraints on us to demand us to get out of bed and to do things each day.
If you're 30-something and over it, it's not going to go away.
That was really interesting, and it was certainly the case with me. Like, As I said, I hoped that it was a phase, but it just wouldn't pass. And a lot of the people that I interviewed and who I've received emails from since, they're just stuck in this place, and it's not until you actively take steps to get to know yourself again and to try things that you're going to cure your thyrsis. And that was really interesting for me because I thought, well, I'm a clever person, so if I ask myself who I am and what I want in life, I should know the answer. And it took a really long time for me to find that. And I think because we stop asking ourselves those questions, and I felt like the last time I'd actively made a decision in my life was when I picked my high school subjects. I just followed one step after another and ended up where I was in the corporate world. And I hadn't really stopped to question and ask those hard and life-defining questions.
Mm. And maybe that's the good thing about a 30-something crisis, is it actually it forces you to ask those questions of ultimate meaning and purpose.
That's right. And I think if you don't ask them, and if you're not prepared to accept the answers, because it's quite confronting. When I looked at myself in the mirror, I saw things I didn't like. But if you're not prepared and don't have the courage to do that, then I think you probably won't move on from it.
And do you think you found, you know, the thing that has helped you?
Yeah, look, it's many things. And I think in the beginning, I thought that I needed a really big change in my life. Like I needed to maybe, you know, move to India and become a Buddhist nun or something like that. But up until the point where I got retrenched, my life hadn't changed that much, but it was completely different. I had more balance in my life, and I realized that my work wasn't going to fulfill my creative or my spiritual or my relationship needs, and I needed to find other things in my life to do that. Did volunteer work and felt more connected to my community. So by changing little things, I solved a big problem.
Well, it's been fascinating talking to you, Casey. Thanks so much for dropping by.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, Casey Edwards, author of 30-something and Over It, talking about that 30-something crisis.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.